You are listening to Stories from Palestine podcast, a bi-weekly podcast recorded in Palestine and about Palestine. My name is Crystal. I studied history and tour guiding, and I live in Palestine with my Palestinian husband and children. I'm originally from the Netherlands. I am a licensed tour guide by the Palestinian Authority, and yes, you can hire me for tours. Follow me on social media and visit my website to learn more about organized tours and programs. You can find the links in the show notes. I hope you will enjoy listening to this episode. It's been almost a month that I uploaded the last episode for the podcast, and I do apologize to all the listeners. I have not been able to really be regular with recording podcast episodes, and it's just because I'm really busy with the tour guide program. We have to attend a lot of excursions and lectures and watch videos, and I do have a bit of work these days as tour guide and the children, of course, so I just haven't been able to do much. But recently, I visited the new Armenian History Museum in Jerusalem in the Armenian Quarter together with a friend, Joseph, and I decided to bring my microphone and record our tour guide, Eric, when he was giving us a wonderful guided tour around the museum. I highly recommend that you go and visit it so you can listen to this episode. The audio quality may be a little bit different than what you're used to, because it was recorded in a place that had a lot of echo, but I hope that that won't bother you. Enjoy the episode, and in the end, I will give you details on how to get there.
First of all, the building we are right now was built in 1853. It used as a pilgrimage house. When Christians came, they had nowhere to sleep. They slept here. Armenian ones only. Okay, something you need to know about the Armenian Quarter is Christian Orthodox. The building, after it was a pilgrimage house, was a living quarter for the monks and priests. They used to live here and study here. Afterwards, the Armenian genocide happened. And after the Armenian genocide happened, a lot of orphan kids came here. They slept in this building. It was used only for the boys. The girls were somewhere else. We're going to talk about it on the second floor, because you won't see anything that is connected here. But after it was an orphanage, it became a living quarter for monks and priests too, again. And then museum. Before this museum, there was a deserted museum here. It was only four rooms, and it was closed for 15 years. So generally, there was nothing very special, except some coins that we don't know where they are right now. But the most important artifact we have here, in history-wise and in value-wise, is the mosaic you see right here. They call it the mosaic of the birds because of the birds they have there. We don't call it the mosaic of the birds. We call it something else. We call it the unknown soldier. It was discovered in 1894. So they didn't move it from its original location until 2018. And we discovered something. We're going to talk about it when we get closer to the mosaic. But you can see where the original location was of the mosaic for about 200 years. It was there and nobody was allowed to see it.
Was in the old city or
outside of the old city, in front of Damascus Gate. If you know Prophet Street, Rehova Nevi'im, it was there. It was founded there, and we didn't know anything about it. How it got there, and the date, it dates back to the 5th, 6th, 7th century. The exact era, we don't really know. But it shows you proof that there were Christians already outside of the old city at that time. This is 6th, 7th century, 5th century. Everybody believed, everybody lives inside the old city, not outside. So it's even more special. Something we discovered when they moved the mosaic from there to here are bones underneath. Around 300 people, this is what we believe. And according to the boxes, you will see a lot of boxes. All of them were full with bones. But we're going to talk about them after we talk about the mosaic. Let's get close to the mosaic. So first of all, you can see here all the native birds of the Israel. You have the peacock, you have the rooster, you have the ducks, flamingos. You have flamingos. If you did not know that, actually they live in Elat.
They have a special place.
They're always there.
I've only seen them in Hula.
So in Hula, it's seasonal. Okay.
Okay.
But in Eilat, they're always there. Wait until they take you to Eilat.
We went to Eilat and we did see them.
It's next to a lot of water and one of their dumpsters, I think. So first of all, we're going to talk only about what we see in the middle. So if you can see in the middle, there is a big vase. This big vase has two handles in yellow. And in the end of the handles, you can see two fishes.
Yeah.
In the middle, Christian context. Miracle of the fishes, Sea of Galilee, Big Tapcha.
Yeah.
Above it, we have a basket full of bread, his flesh. Above it, we have a pelican, Last Supper room, the meaning that he can't feed his youngs, feed them to himself. Christian context. Above it, we have the clam and the pearl, the preciousness of life. And we have the eagle, the Holy Spirit, supremacy of air, flies above and can still see clearly underneath. Above it, we have the cage and the bird inside, the meaning of the soul. We have a basket full of grape, his blood. Two pigeons to show you a bit of equality at that time. And the inscription in Armenian that I will say in a minute what it says. And above it, we have a mass. You can see a big plate and birds eating off of it. In Armenian, we call it Badarak. This is what they say in mass in Armenian, Badarak. I'm going to go a bit down to the inscription in Armenian that says that only God knows the name of the Armenians that gave their life for their belief and their salvation. We did not know what it means until 2018, when they excavated the mosaic from there to here, we discovered the bones.
Oh, yeah.
So that's one of the earliest martyr graves we know of as Armenians. And their story is not even in the 6th, 7th century. It's in the 3rd century in the Roman Empire in Malatya. Malatya is Turkey today. And they were part of the 13th legion of the Roman Empire. How we got Armenians under the Romans, we're going to talk about it in 2 minutes. But they got an option. They were Christians already in a time where Christianity wasn't accepted. They gave them an offer. Either you go back as pagans or I'm going to kill you all. They all preferred to be killed. That's why only God knows their name and we don't. The only connections we had to them is their general, Porictus. And he will later on will show in manuscripts from the Roman time in France.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's only connection we have. So generally, their general was Porictus. In his army, under his hand, there were around 300 men. So underneath it, there's around 300 men.
That's the connection we have to the bones and to the mosaic itself.
Because when they came here 300 years later as pilgrimage, they brought the bones with them and built the mosaic for them. Okay?
So the Armenians were the first nation to become Christian, right?
Yes.
How did that happen? You're going to tell us?
We're going to talk about it. Something we won't see when we talk about the Armenian genocide is the orphans. This is the graffiti of the orphans. They made it when they came here in 1922, and this is their names. Vartan, Hagop, Mesrov, those are their names. We're going to talk about it on the second floor, but you won't see them on the second floor.
Yeah.
This is something you can feel. Yeah. This is 100 years old.
Curious, too, when we talk about it. I wouldn't expect orphans from a genocide to come to a country that's occupied by the genociders. All right.
That's the interesting part, but a bit of a preview. You had something here. Entire Turkey didn't have foreign powers. All of them were stationed here. So this room gives us the entire background of the Armenian people. From where first time they appeared in maps BC, how they got Christianized and how they got their letters. So first time, before this even kingdom came, we had Greater Armenia. Look at the date, 320 BC minus 428. Alexander the Great, while he was conquering the Caucasians, he met the Armenian people, talks about them very, very shortly, and they will show on the map at this time, BC. But this is not one of the reasons Turkey will be occupied mostly by Armenians. This is not the reason. The reason will come with King Tikrat. Sea to sea kingdom, from the Caspian Sea to the Mediterranean Sea, twice that size. And it shows you this is Turkey of today. And you can see half of it belongs to the Armenian. But you can even see here they reached above acre of today. And again, I'm going to go back to the butt. If you look at the date, 70 BC. As a tour guide, you need to know something very, very important about this date. This is the peak of the Roman Empire. Armenians will try to fight against them, will not hold up. They will fall and become a vessel of the Roman Empire. The connection of how you got Armenians in the Roman Empire, this is it. Why? They recruited soldiers not only from Rome, from other places, from their vessels, because they need a big army. They didn't have the same benefits as the Roman soldier, but there still were soldiers in the Roman legions that were not Romans. So this is how the Armenians became part of the Roman legion, and they had soldiers in them. One of the stories, even in the 10th legion that was here, stationed here, Armenian soldiers were them too, but not as Christians, as pagans. You have to remember, this is 70 BC. Christianity does not exist yet. Another connection, which we believe as the Armenian, he's talking about the Armenians because nobody else shows in the inscriptions. We have Titus Flavius Josephus in the Wars of the Jews, the non-Latin and non-Greek nation. The only one in the books that shows he has some kind of present here were the Armenians. So we think that he mentions about the non-Latin and non-Greek as the Armenians. But this is their general knowledge here, BC, after BC. But they were not Christians as a nation. As a nation, they will become Christian only in 301. The first nation to accept Christianity, which is a big question for us, how they got their footprint here such an early time. This is the reason. Because when they accepted Christianity, the most holiest place is where?
Yeah.
Nothing else. So you start having a lot of Armenian presence already from the 5th century. Because this is the pilgrimage.
Yeah.
I'm going to talk about the story of how the Armenians became Christians. Before 301, Armenians were pagans. We believed in the gods of the sun, of the moon, of the sea. Really pagan until the way. What happens is one of Armenian people, his name was Gregory the Illuminator. He was in Jerusalem. He got Christianity from two students. Theodore and Matthias gave him Christianity. He takes the Christianity, goes all the way to Armenia. And they look at him and he says, no. They put him in jail for 13 years. The same day they put Gregory the Illuminator in the prison, the king falls to be ill. They say he starts act like a wild boar. Usually in the pictures, he will look like a boar because he acted like a boar. They bring physicians, magicians, doctors, whatever you think of, nothing works. One of the days, the king's sister has a dream that says, the guy in the jail can help you. They take him out of the jail. He gives a small blessing and a prayer on the king. The king suddenly feels better, takes Christianity, gives it to the people, 301, no questions asked. Some kind of a miracle. And the second miracle is that they didn't ask questions. They accepted it as it is in 301. So this gives you the complete visual of how they became Christian. But we had the language. We didn't have the inscriptions. The inscriptions will come to play only in 405, in the 5th century. And it will come to a priest by a dream. So the base of the earliest Christians is not in Armenian. It's in Greek. Okay, that's everything you will see. It's in Greek language. Then it will become, each one of them will take it to its own language. Is it Russian? Is it Latin? Is it Armenian? Is it Coptic? Each one of them will take it from that time. As soon as you have language and letters, you can make your own kind of Christianity. And Armenians will do it already in the 5th century. In 405, a priest gets in his dream, comes an angel. The angel has the Armenian letters on it, and he gives us 36 letters. Too much. 36 letters is a lot. And you can see behind you how it looks. So the priest that in his dream came the angel, they call it Mesrop Mashtos. Okay, his statue is all over Armenia and you will meet him. This is how the earliest Armenian language looked. The closest language you ever have to the Armenian language is the Ethiopian language. Uh-huh. Only by the letters, not in the talking. This is the base that you have. And the story is either he came to Ethiopia or went to Ethiopia. We don't know. And if you want to look how the Armenian language looks today, this is it. And today, unfortunately, we have 38 letters.
38?
Yeah, they added two more.
How many do we have?
In English, 24.
Oh.
Yeah.
Do you have a name for your language?
Armenian.
What is that in Armenian?
Hayaren.
Also, you don't call Armenian.
Right? Hayastan. Yes, Hayastan. The reason is, just so you to know, Armenians today are very, very different. Not all of them are the same. Two reasons. One, Russian occupation, and the other one is the deportation of a lot of Armenians. So you have two kinds of language today. The Hindu-European Armenian, and you have the Russian Armenian. They kind of sound alike, but the Armenian-Russian is a bit Russian. And the other one is mixed up from a couple of languages. You have Turkish in it, Arabic in it, Hebrew in it. It has a lot of mix up in it because they lived in the Middle East.
So what do they speak in? Which one of those do they speak in Yerevan? What's the predominant?
Armenian, which is the Armenian Russian. Here we speak the Armenian Hindu European. They say Parev, we say Parev. They say Barev, much more like aggressive. It's much more aggressive than our language. We are very, very a bit softer. Like they have the Russian narrative in it and it's very heavy. We have we have the Hindu European one and it's much easier talking. Like tell me a sentence, I can like translate it and it sounds completely different from what an Armenian from Armenia will say.
You would understand each other?
They will understand me. I won't understand them. It's the same base, but they have Russian in it.
Yeah.
And when they start talking Russian, like, bro, I don't know Russian.
So the working theory is, because obviously an oral language exists before a written language. This guy showed up, he's like, and just started assigning the sounds to
So exactly different. As you see it, he gets the letters from the angel. The angel tells him everything, what is what. And he does exactly the same with the people. He just makes letters to the language that already exists.
This was in what year?
5th century.
So like in terms of like written language, that's pretty late, huh? For like developing rhythm.
Very, very late. And the second thing, it's special. Which language came in a dream?
Yeah.
Either he does a lot of drugs.
Need to be a believer in this country, Joseph. Come on, we're in the Holy Land.
The Holy Land, if you don't, if you're not a believer, you will get Jerusalem syndrome. Yeah. You start walking here barefoot, man. You should watch out. You should really watch out. So here we have three firmans. Firman is base of rights. Without this, a lot of Christians will have problem to stay. We are allowed to be here. We have freedom to be here. Because those three are the best proof of how Christians were able to stay here in the Muslim rule. So the first firman that was ever wrote for all of the Christians was Prophet Muhammad. He gave us the best of rights. And when he dies, Khalif Omar comes. And Khalif Omar writes us another firman because he already knows the deal. He was one of his secretaries, so he knows what's going on. And later on, we have Khalif Ali, which is the disappearing one. Until today, nobody knows where he is. But those three are main rulers in the Islam religion that gave rights to the Christians. Without this, no Christian can say we were allowed to be here or we can be here, because without this, you have no rights. So this is one of the reasons of how Christians were still keeping pilgrimage here and keeping Christian nations here. A problem. Prophet Muhammad was an alphabet. He can't read or write. So who will write the firman? His secretaries. And one of them was Omar. So that's why he knows already the deal. And it continues.
Are these copies of real documents?
Yes, the real ones are hidden somewhere behind the patriarch's room.
But it's property of the
church.
Of the church.
Everything, everything you see that is in the Armenian monastery or quarter that belongs to the Armenians is automatically to the church. There is one family here that has a presence since the Crusader time. They're the only one that has a private land in the Armenian quarter.
Is that the picture of the man of war?
No, they live in the United States. Those are the Mardigian family. They gave money to the museum you see here. All of the museum is privately funded. Nothing Israel gave even one penny to this place. Zero. So here we have one of the independent kingdoms of the Armenians. This is the only kingdom that will survive the longest. That's why it's the most important Armenian kingdom. This kingdom later on will have the harshest time in the Ottoman Empire. We're going to talk about it. But you should know, this kingdom is one of the reasons you have such a presence in Jerusalem of Armenians. Because of in the Crusader time, some of the nations did not buy the sea, they did buy the land. What happens is they get mixed up with the Armenian people in their way. And they pick up something Armenians were famous in. Women. We had the exotic woman. Green eyes, black hair, blue eyes, black hair. Something in Europe they didn't have. So this is the reason why they pick up Armenian women and came to Jerusalem. And later on, we had three queens ruling Jerusalem in three different periods of time. We're going to talk about them in the next room. But it gives you a visual of Armenians, not in Israel itself, in Palestine, you can say. But they're outside and they have present inside.
So during the period of the Crusaders, the pink area here on the map. It's an Armenian kingdom. Oh, this area. And it's called?
Kilikia.
Yes.
And if you go to Armenian today, it's a beer.
It's the name of a beer?
Yes. A good one.
Oh, yeah. Kilikia yeah. beer.
So first of all, meet the three Armenian queens. Mm. One of them is Queen Arda, the first queen of Jerusalem. He married her through, how we call it, interes. Interes is a reason, not just because. There was a reason because Armenians were powerful at that time and he needed to make strong connections. That's why he married her.
Like a political marriage.
Exactly. It's political marriage, but there was no love between them. And what happens is after a couple of years, he realized who she is. He puts her in a monastery. She realized what he's doing, gave up her titles, became a nun. Only 5 years. And afterwards, we got another Armenian queen that married Baldwin II.
Yeah.
And when she married Baldwin II, her name was Morphia. On the way to Jerusalem, they got captured. And most of the time, they will spend it in captivity. She will only will be able to make coins.
Oh, yeah.
That's it. Morphia's coins. And it's Greek. But the most important Armenian queen we will ever have is Melisande. Melisande is the best queen Armenians can ever wish for one reason. She had a fetish to Armenians. So what happens is every time Armenians came here, she helped them. And she will buy the Armenians their quarter. It's Crusader Tyre. At her time, at her peak, we will have 72 churches, monasteries, churches all over Israel, Palestine, whatever you want to call it. 72. Today we have 8.5. The difference is huge. And where is the half? Is where she's buried. It's at, if you know, mother of the Virgin holy Mary tomb of Mother Mary, the mm-hmm. Virgin. She's buried there in the Greek side.
Yeah.
Okay, on the right side.
Olives. Yes. Yeah.
Eventually, that's one of the most important places for women as Christians to be buried in, and it's an honor that she's buried in it.
So Queen Melisande is the one who established the Armenian quarter by buying the yes. property here.
Yes. Yes, but we had present here, not the quarter here. We had the St. James Church here. That's a 5th century church. Later on, we didn't get anything else because we were on the church. We had some places, but not the quarter. Quarter, her time. 72 churches, her time. The biggest present of Armenians is her time. I call it the Armenian Golden Age because after this, another period of time will be good for the Armenians, but later on, it will all be downhill. Why am I saying it? Because after the crusade, they pissed off the wrong person that his name is Salah ad-Din al-Ayyubi. And what happens is with Salah ad-Din al-Ayyubi, Battle of Hittin, the crusaders have the biggest defeat because of two wrong choices. Going fully metal-plated up north in the summer, you don't do that. You can cook eggs on it. So they got cooked on the way to the battle. That's one. The second thing, Salah ad-Din, light cavalry, destroy water sources. You can't drink. You're cooked on the way. You will lose the battle. Believe me. And they will lose. And what happens is the king falls to be a prisoner. Salah ad-Din comes with an army to Jerusalem. Jerusalem will surrender. And what happens is he will kick out the Catholics from the old city and the Greek Orthodox. Why? Because those two Christians are strong enough to make an army against him. So what he does is he gives the minority Orthodox the important places to them, which is the Armenians, Coptic, Arameans, and Ethiopians. They will get all of the rights of the Holy Sepulchre and the holy places. So behind you, you can see the firman of Salah ad-Din.
Oh,
and this is how the original looks. In the middle, there's supposed to be in Arabic that he gives it to the Armenians, Coptic, Syriacs, and Ethiopians.
It's like a scroll. Like
all of them are a scroll.
Wow.
Christianity started bringing the books. Because the Jewish earliest Megillot, which is manuscripts, they open like this.
To the side.
Not only that, it does. Christians are the only reason today the Bible and the Old Testament look like a book. It's divided because of Christianity. In the Jewish, it's all as one. You have to guess to see where you have to read your, like, Parashat HaShavua, which is your, before you go to Bar Mitzvah, you have stuff.
Oh, you don't have chapters. You
no
just
chapters.
Have to really scroll open the whole scroll and look
no, nothing,
the
nothing.
Verses.
It's only what is wrote. That's it. So it's a bit hard to know what it means. This room, we're not going to stop too much because it talks about the Mongols. One thing you should know between the Armenians and the Mongols, that they had some kind of teamwork. And the reason is when the Mongols got inside the Armenian land, they went inside the churches. They looked up and they did not see Christianity. They see something that looks like the Mongols. And when they asked the Armenians, are you Christians? They said, no, everything is okay. We are with you. And it works. Armenians were Christians, but they lied to the Mongols to say, we are with you. Everything is okay. The resonance, they did not know how to draw normal faces. It looked like a bit of Mongols. So that saved their life. And today, if you go to Armenia, you have churches from the 5th, 6th, 7th, 8th century. Still exists. This is the picture that they say saved their life. It looks like an Armenian priest to the Armenian. But for a Mongol, it doesn't look like an Armenian priest. It looked like someone Mongolian reading a book.
Yeah.
So let's say sometimes not knowing how to draw saves you.
Reminds me a little bit of the story of the Nativity Church, where they had these Persians. They were the three kings or the wise men, and they looked like Persians. So when the Persians came, they did not destroy the church.
Exactly. Yeah. That's one of the stories. And today, if you go, have you been to Bethlehem?
Yeah.
Did you saw the mosaic floor?
Yeah.
So that's something that is one of the oldest mosaics you have in a church that is still complete. We're going to talk about the Mamluks. The Mamluks are the reason of the end of the Mongols. If you did not know this, they will lose against the Mongols. This will be one of the reasons why the Mongols will never be in the Middle East. They will leave the side and they will leave the last Armenian kingdom defenseless. Because the Mongols were helping the Armenians as a big brother, defending them. But when they lose and they leave this side, the last Armenian kingdom is in a big, big trouble. And what happens is that the last Armenian kingdom becomes an open season. The Mamluks have no one to defend the Armenians, and they start attacking. The last Armenian kingdom will fall in the 14th century. That's it. No more Armenian independent kingdom until the fall of the Soviet Union. So around 500 years, no more Armenian independent autonomy. It's gone. But their last king was half French, half Armenian. And what happens with him, we're going to talk in the next room. One thing about the Mamluks, they were not from Egypt. They were Caucasians. And their life, what they did in their life, were mercenaries. That's why they will be one of the strongest empires in the Middle East, because they were born to kill already. They know what they're doing.
So they were in the service of the Turks, the Mamluks?
Muslims, not Turks. Turks will be later.
Sorry. Right.
They are, what I can say, the easiest thing, they are Caucasians, that their life mission were mercenaries. What happens later on, they will start being so powerful, they will start their own kingdom in Egypt. And they will become one of the strongest armies and empires in the Middle East because they're born to kill. They know what they're doing. Generation after generation.
It's like the Muslims, they knew that if you want to have somebody who's really reliable, you pick them up when they are children, you raise them from their homes. They are dependent on you then. You raise them as Muslims. You teach them and train them how to be good fighters. And you tell them that, yeah, you are completely dependent on me. But in the end, when they were good warriors, they were left out of slavery. That was kind of slavery. And then they could marry. And when they were married and they become a Muslim, they are not slaves anymore, which means that the Mamluk will not give his Mamlukness to his children. So if they wanted new Mamluks, they have to go again to Caucasia and bring others.
That will be their end, because the other nation will do the same and think the Turks will come. Because when the Turks will come, everything will be changed. But the Turks today, they don't look like Arabs. Why? Because they're mixed up by the other Caucasian people.
So, okay. The Mamluks were
Caucasians
who didn't have necessarily a land or a home.
Exactly.
This traveling army at one point said, we're going to conquer and take this land.
Exactly.
They did it in Egypt. That was their base.
The base from Egypt, because they were under the Fatimid rule, and the Fatimids ruled from Egypt, and they basically took over from the Fatimids.
Okay. Yeah. Later, the Seljuk will come to play, and after the Seljuks, you have the Turks. Too many people coming and going. That's basically the Middle East story. So we are standing in front of the last Armenian king. His name is Leon the Fifth. In Armenian, Levon the Fifth. When his kingdom falls, he's taken to Cairo as a prisoner. King of France hears about it. He says, no way, a noble man is a prisoner, because he was half French. He takes him out from Cairo to Spain. After a year in Spain, Leon decides he doesn't like the life in Spain and goes to France. And he will live there until he dies. And when he dies, he will get buried in Saint-Denis.
Oh,
Okay, tomb of kings of France. So you have a non-French king buried with the king of France. It's an honor for him.
Does that mean that Armenians now would go to France to visit the Basilica in Saint-Denis to see this?
Maybe, depends how Armenian you are.
Oh, yeah.
Depends
yeah.
on the level. Yeah. So here we're going to talk about the Mamluk time of Jerusalem. This is the most hard time for all of the Orthodox Christians. The reason is the tax the Mamluks gave on the non-Muslims here. So most of the Orthodox Christians will lose their rights. The Ethiopians, the Coptic with the Arabs will lose their rights in the Holy Sepulchre because they're unable to pay. And the second thing that will happen, the Orthodox Greek will come back and the Catholics will come back. They have the money to pay. The only people that are in the biggest trouble are the Armenians. They have no way of paying and everything is starting to lose their grip. So what happens here, a priest comes and says, I got it. I'm going to help you as much as I can. He takes a big chain, puts it around his neck to show the burden of the Armenians in Jerusalem and goes on donation street. After a couple of years, he comes back with enough money, closes the debt, fixes the churches that start deteriorate, and with the rest of the money, builds the walls around the monastery. That's why we have walls around the monastery and two different inscriptions that says a curse on your head. So don't touch the Armenians. You will have a curse on your head. Okay. And behind us, we can see the degree of tolerance. This is not a firman. This is a degree of tolerance. They accept it to tolerate you. And you will have some kind of benefits if you keep the money, but you don't have rights. The firman is rights. This is they accept to tolerate you.
Okay, so basically from all the Muslim rulers, the Mamluks were the least...
Friendly ones. One-to-one.
Yeah. So I've heard in Mamluk time, churches were not allowed to ring church bells.
That's true, even the Turkish time. Until 1830, it was banned. Until the power of the Germans, they said, we had enough. You're going to start giving us the rights we want as freedom to Christians, and they will give them. The new gate will be built in one of those reasons, because there was really a nice entry for the Christians, so they opened up the new gate.
Yeah.
And it's close to the Notre Dame, to the other places. Yeah. So that's one of the reasons. So here you have a codex, 9th century. It's original. This is a calendar from the half of the 19th century. Yeah. Prayer school of 17th century. All those three are originals.
Wow.
Okay, the rest are handmade replicas by the same person that renovated all the photos of the Armenian churches. So you can see the difference between the rest.
Yeah.
The original ones are in the Armenian library. They take them out every couple of months for temporary showcase. Okay, because they will deteriorate.
Yeah.
They're 1,000 years old books. So have a little
wow.
run around and run outside.
Yep. Is Armenian iconography very different from, for example, Orthodox?
It looks the same. The material is different. One of the Armenian famous authors that wrote one of the famous books, his name is Toros Roslin, and he used one of the most expensive colors to make his books. He has 7 of them. 4 of them are here in Jerusalem. You can see them there. Toros Roslin, if you know the rock from Afghanistan, they call it Lipaz.
Oh. Yeah, yeah. Azul Lapis.
Yeah. And he used this blue color on his books.
Okay.
So it makes it even much more valuable.
Yeah.
7 of them he made with that color. 4 okay. of them are right here. Every couple of months they take them out. They put them here in the showcase. Oh. This is an Armenian khachkar. Okay, Armenian khachkar, it is what it sounds like. It's Armenian cross stone. It's cross in stone. Literally what it means. This dates back to 1081, before the Crusaders.
Yeah.
And it wasn't found here. It was found, guess where? In the parking. How do you know it's Armenian? If you look in the middle, those two ends always ends with a tree. That's the Holy Trinity. And here you have in Armenian the name of, which is broken. But the grapes is in Armenian, is something Armenian. The ceramic, just you to know, it exists only in Israel by the same 3 families that came here in the British Mandate, Karakashian, Ohanessian, and Balyan. Those 3 families that started the Armenian ceramic in Jerusalem. It doesn't exist anywhere else because they came here in the British Mandate and they stayed here. In Armenia, they stopped doing it. Today, you have Turkish ceramic, and that's in Turkey. Why am I saying Turkish? Because the Armenians learned from the Turks and then made it Armenian because the arts completely different from each other.
What is this Ian that we hear?
Son of.
Oh, like Ibn.
Exactly.
Ah, the son of.
Okay. The entire Caucasian has the same narrative.
Yeah.
Okay. The Azerbaijanis has with Kov. The Georgian has with Shvili. So something you should know about the Caucasians, each one of them ends as a family name with a different verb in it.
Yes.
What we see here are each firman of the Ottoman time. Each one of them is 100 years. You can see the Christmas trees are different because each one of them is a different sultan. Okay, Sultan Suleiman, Sultan Abdul Hamid, the first, the second. It's more gifts throughout the Armenian history. But now we're basically almost in the modern time.
Yeah, so we traveled all around the inner courtyard through a historical overview, but then through the eyes of the Armenians.
Exactly. I have the fancy, fancy one.
The royal room.
The most expensive room I have.
Wow. Are these chalices that are used for the Eucharist? For the communion?
Yes, for the Badarak. Everything you see here was used in the church for once upon a time. But this is not the interesting side. The interesting side is this side. What you see here are capes of priest bedyards and the monks. The far right one was hand-sawed for the Armenian bedyard 100 years ago. It took them 13 years to saw this. Two brothers from Armenia. It has silk in it, gold in it, and silver in it. And you can see the narrative of St. James, one of the 12 students that his head was decapitated.
Oh, I thought this was John the Baptist.
No.
Oh, it's James.
So James, his head is buried in St. James here, and his body, Compostela, Santiago, Spain.
Why does St. James figure so prominently for the Armenians? Why is it so important?
One of the earliest people that took Christianity and started it.
Into Armenia.
No, he started it here, and where the earliest presence of Christians eventually was from here, as the people that wrote it and gave it to the people was St. James. So that's why the brotherhood here is even called St. James Brotherhood. The entire Armenian brotherhood here is dedicated to the St. James. Okay, everything. Even the symbol of the Armenian patriarch here, it's a B, but it's not a B. It's two letters in Armenians that says Surp Hagop, Saint James.
Oh,
but
wow.
In Armenian. Mm-hmm. Okay. You can see here what the monks used to wear 100 years ago in ceremonies. Today, it's the same color, much less gold. And the most interesting one is the blue one. 1799, someone French came to Israel.
Ah, remember?
His name was Napoleon. And while his conquest in Israel, what he did is he started in Gaza. From Gaza, he went to Jaffa. From Jaffa, he went to Acre. But in Jaffa, there is a story with the Armenian monastery. In the Armenian monastery, he will station there his 6 soldiers. The people that can't fight, he will put them in the Armenian monastery and the Armenian priest will take care of them. And after the defeat in Acre, he comes back to Jaffa because from Jaffa, he will departure back to France. But there is a story that he take his tent and torn it to pieces and gave a piece to whoever helped them on the way. So the Armenians got one, and from that one, they sought a blue cape for one of their priests. You can see it.
That's the one here.
Exactly. It's supposed to be inside. It's supposed to be La Napoleon de Napoleon. Okay, why am I saying this supposed to be? I haven't seen it yet. But it's all original. I have some French people came here. They said this color is drawing a French color. So it has some visual of about that, but I still wait to the day that was inside the La Napoleon. Okay, so here we're gonna be a bit sadder. We're gonna go into the Armenian genocide vibes. So everything you will see here is a bit touching. But before that, this is ceramic work of Vic Lepejan. If you know Vic, it's the small ceramic on the Armenian patriarch, the small one. You go down the stairs next to the Armenian Tevaret. This is his job.
Okay.
Took him a year and a half. He's the only one that doesn't do traditional ceramics. It's very, very unique. That's why I love him, because he doesn't stick to the 100 years old. It's newer. So his art, if you haven't seen, go see. Beautiful.
Okay.
Mount Ararat.
Yeah.
If you did not know, belonged to Armenian people before. It's there where humanity started again after the big flood. As a reminder, the Armenian pointy hat.
That's why the Armenian priests have these pointy heads,
yes,
to remind us of Ararat and the, yes, story of the Ark of Noah.
Yes, and once upon a time it was in Armenia, today it's in Turkey. So that's another reminder. 301, we accepted Christianity. 405, we got the inscriptions by Mesrop Mashtots. 451, I don't know if you know this, Chalcedonian meeting.
Vedat. Chalcedonian, yes. Okay, Chalcedonian.
The Armenians are not in it because we were busy fighting the Persians. His name is Vartan Mamigonyan. He was the general. He will die in the war, but the Persians will back off from the Armenians. From the 5th century until today, they have good relationships. Iran and Armenia are very good friends until today. Zovar Antradnig, Fedayin, not Fedayun. Fedayin, they fought against the Ottoman Empire in World War I. This is not Stalin, this is the style. Zovar Antradnig. He was the general of the Armenian rebels against the Ottoman Empire. And underneath it, we have the horrors of the Armenian genocide. 1.5 million Armenians will be brutally murdered by the Ottoman rulers. They may claim it was random, but we're going to see how it's not random and it was well planned. This is Khorvirab. This is where they stopped everything. You have here the Armenian important churches, Echmiadzin, Heripsimeam, very, very old churches. They're 8th century, 7th century. This is the earliest churches Armenia has to offer. So you can see here the visual of the important places of Armenians. So remember how I said 1894, 1896?
Mm-hmm.
In 2 years, Sultan Abdulhamid II start searching for enemies in his empire. The enemies were non-Muslim people, less the Jewish, more Christians, because they saw them as the biggest enemies. And as you see here, in 2 years, he will brutally murder 200,000 people, not only Armenians, Coptic, Aramaic, Greeks. He will try to take their power from the Christians and give them to the Muslims. Eventually, that was his main goal. His entire nation will start being Muslim. Lately, but truly, some people will hear about it, will try to help, nothing will help. But the Turks will start looking for their biggest enemy, which lately, but surely, would show that they were the Armenians for 3 reasons. One, we wanted a country. They did not like that. The second thing is, we were the educated one, the smarter ones. They didn't like that. We were Christians. We're not Muslims. And the third, we had the good land, the mining sites, the archaeological places. We owned it because we were there before them. They didn't like it. So those reasons, they started hating the Armenians and Armeniophobia started to come inside. They start blaming the Armenians as thieves, liars, and even spies for the Russian Empire. So in 1909, they will start killing only Armenians in Armenian places. Kilikya. In Adana, they will start hanging Armenians on the streets, destroy the Armenian quarter, the Armenian monasteries, the Armenian church. They will start to destroy everything and start killing more and more Armenians by the help of the Kurdish. The Kurdish people were bought by money. So as long as they killed Armenians, they will get their money. Without that, they won't get the money. One of the things that will happen too is Mossadegh. Have you heard the book, 40 Days of Mossadegh? It's a book about the Armenians in Kassab, that the French army will come and will save them and take them to France. And that's why today in France, you have big Armenian communities. But the most important day for the Armenians is the Memorial Day, April 24, 1915. And the reason is what happened. The entire Armenian elite will be taken, either murdered on the spot or later on. Most of them, almost all of them, 1915.
Israelians.
This family did not survive. Tried to find the reason of the last name. Nothing. Usually what I dedicate my time is for the priest Komidas. If you've been in Armenia, you have heard his name. He's one of the famous Armenian authors we have. He is the reason why today we have in Armenia folk music and did not destroyed in the Ottoman time, in the Armenian genocide. What happened is his life mission was preserving the Armenian folk music. When the Turkish and the Kurds reached to him, they burned his family in front of him and his artwork in front of him, everything in flame. Him, because of the trauma, he stopped talking. And that's the reason he wasn't killed with his family, because they said he wouldn't talk. Little they will know, he will later on recreate all the Armenian folk music. And today, all of the Armenian folk music is based on the thing he was able to save. Okay, his name is Komidas. I even have a four family member, which is Nestres Zakarian. Zakarian family is one of the oldest families in Jerusalem. They go back to the Crusader time. And he will be murdered here, and later on his five orphans will come here. Okay, but after this event, the Turks and the Kurdish got a name. SO units, special organization, because what they were doing wasn't random. They were well organized. And here they start doing different stuff. Selling women, buying women, sword games, decapitations, and death marches. The decapitations was to show a way of getting payment by the Kurdish. They had to cut off the heads, ears, and noses to show how many Armenians they killed to get money on it. Instead of carrying the entire body, this is the small things they did. The death marches for the Armenian people wasn't in the snow, wasn't in the winter. It was in the summer, in the desert. So one to two days, that's it. You won't survive anything. So even Armenian soldiers, Armenians in the Ottoman Empire, that's how they will build them first. You can see here how the death marches start. And something Turkey until today claims it was random. They didn't plan it. One question. Will you write it down? No. Because it was random. We didn't plan it. They wrote down the dates, the convoys, and the deportees. 1,040,306.
And these sources are available in archives? Or
everywhere. Turkey will not let you see them, but they have them. Concentration camps. They put Armenians in camps without food or water, and most of them will die there too. You can see here, no fat on the bones at all. And the amount of people that will die at the concentration camps, almost 400,000. Natural death, yeah? Very natural, no food, no water.
So that means that concentration camps is a concept that already existed before Germans
the
or
Germans
the Nazis.
Learned everything from the Turks. Whoever made the trains were Germans. They had Germans officer with the Ottomans. They saw what they're doing, and later on they will make it on the Jewish people. There is a reason why Hitler said nobody is going to remember the Jewish like nobody remembers the Armenians. Okay, it's something very famous that we use until today, because Israel denies the Armenian genocide.
Israel denies it.
They don't accept it. It's denying. Why did it happen in Jerusalem? We were under the Ottoman rule. You had here United States, Amsterdam, Netherlands, all of them were here. They will see, they will talk. The only reason it wasn't happening here, it's because of the foreign power. That's why a lot of Armenians will come here. The results of the Armenian genocide is 816 orphans coming to Jerusalem. 545 boys in this building, 271 girls, Cross Valley Monastery. The next room is dedicated to the orphans.
So the presence of foreigners in Jerusalem was a kind of saved the Armenians who lived here.
Because they can't do it here. Yeah, as soon as they will do, everybody will hear. And everybody will be against them. Like in World War II, as soon as they heard what happened to the Jewish people, much more countries starting to help. Okay, so here you can see the boys.
Wow, that's a lot of boys.
545. Those are the boys. I'll show you the girls. Behind you, you can see how the Armenians survived. Okay, they were faking their identities as Muslim, as European, something. They're not Armenians. And this is one of the reasons it will save their lives. But later on, when they came to Jerusalem, the Armenian patriarch here showed them how to cook, how to clean, how to sew, give them doctors. But later on, organizations of the British start bringing Armenians here. So they brought them by trains, by ships. They start bringing a lot of Armenians to Jerusalem. One of the stories that was happen is the Armenian choir. We have an Armenian choir, a band that will play for Haile Selassie. When he comes to Jerusalem, they will play for him. Haile Selassie, something like that.
Ethiopian
emperor. And when they play for him here, he likes them and takes them to Ethiopia, and they will play for the Rastafari, the crown prince. And today you have an Armenian-Ethiopian community in Ethiopia. Beside this, this is Jaffa Street. Jaffa Street, half of it belongs to the Armenians. They pay rent to the Armenians. The city hall of Jerusalem is on Armenian land. They pay rent to the Armenian patriarch. When you walk on Jaffa, look on the left where the buildings are, you will see a B in rock. In the rock, that's an Armenian. If it's on the metal, that's the British bank that was there. They call it banks. But the Armenian is in the stone, and that's St. James.
Do you know how many at its highest peak, how many are Armenians?
Armenians.
29.
29,000 Armenians. Most of them will live in the wars of 48 until 67. Today, you have less than 3,000 Armenians in Jerusalem. 27,000 Armenians left the country. You can see here Peres, Teddy Koleg, Haile Selassie, Yasser Arafat, the Pope, King Faisal al-Hussein, kings of Iraq and Jordan, Herbert Samuel, Jordanian authorities, the Catholicus, the Armenian Pope. You have one, he's in Armenia, Echmiadzin. He came here once.
He's a Catholic Armenian? You have
no,
like...
Catholicus. We have a Pope.
Oh, okay.
His name is Catholicus. That's an Armenian equivalent to a Pope. You have one, he's in charge of all of the Armenians. Armenia Yerevan, that is the station.
So you have one, the Catholicos, and then you have how many patriarchs?
Three. One here, one Turkey, one United States. It shows you a bit of difference and power of the Armenian people as locals for almost 2,000 years. We know almost everything in the country, where to go, how to go. But today it's different, much, much different. First imprint in the old city. Okay, 1833, before the Jewish people, it was used only for religious purposes. You can see the original books. Those are the prints they used on the printer itself. And the earliest photos of Jerusalem were by the Armenians. We had the patriarch with the fetish in photos. So most of the earliest photos belong to the Armenian people of Jerusalem. Besides that, we have here how to watch movie. They called it Ravaged Armenia. It shows you everything that happened in the Armenian genocide. Very hard to watch movie, so it's your decision to watch or what. Okay, but beside that, this is the museum.
It's incredibly well done.
Beautiful.
Very good. Oh my God. It's very well researched. I hope you enjoyed this episode. If you want to visit the museum, it is quite easy to find. From the Jaffa Gate, you keep right, you pass by the David's Tower, and you go through the Armenian Patriarchate Road. You will pass by the St. James Church and Monastery. You keep going straight, and it'll be on your left side before the road bends to the left. There are some options for free guided tours, usually at 11 in the morning and 2 in the afternoon. But you can contact the museum about that. If you are bringing a group, then you can also get your private tour guide. And besides that, everything is explained in 5 languages, in English, Arabic, Hebrew, Armenian, and Russian. So even without a guide, you can read all the information. And of course, you can watch the movie. The mosaic is beautiful, and I really recommend that you visit this museum. I will post a link to their Facebook page in the show notes of this podcast episode, as well as their email address and phone number. That's it for now. I won't promise you when I will be able to upload a new episode, but I'll do my best to do another one within the next month. And that's the end of this week's episode. Thank you for listening. You know, producing this podcast takes a lot of time, and there are also costs for hosting the podcast, for the website and some of the subscriptions related to online recording and editing. So if you enjoy listening to Stories from Palestine, which is available completely for free, then you can do a donation on the Ko-fi platform. And that is really very helpful, even if it's just a little contribution. Because if all listeners do that once in a while, then I can continue producing new episodes. It's very easy. Just click the link in the show notes right after this message. And I hope you will listen again to the next episode.